What about the sacrifices? A messianic perspective on Messiah and the Levitical sacrifices. Disc 3, The Heavenly Temple. The following lecture was recorded live during the First Fruits of Zion 2009 Shavuot Conference at Beth Emanuel Sabbath Fellowship in Hudson, Wisconsin.
Here's what we're working on. What's our goal? There's no difficulty here. So far we've seen that we are working through three difficulties. One is that the idea that the death and resurrection Messiah cancels the temple and the priesthood and the sacrifices is an abrogation of Torah. The second difficulty is that it's inconsistent with the apostolic community and their stance regarding the temple. And the third difficulty is that there are prophecies of a messianic era temple that is coming. Right? So these are the three things. There's also three things that were allegedly abolished, right? The Aaronic priesthood, the temple, and the sacrifices therein. So in the previous hour, we learned that the writer of the book of Hebrews has already demonstrated to us that Messiah is not an Aaronic priest. So now we're going to start working through the next things, and we're going to find those in Hebrews 8 and 9. So here's a long passage from the beginning, from Hebrews 8, okay? English Standard Version, which is generally pretty good. The thing with these passages in Hebrews, you'll probably like listen to this lecture and then you'll go home and you read it in your Bible and be like, how did that work again? Because these are all bollocked up in translation, like intentionally so, with verb tenses being changed and so on in order to fit the theological bias of the translator. So we could look at several examples of that. We'll see a few. But English Standard Version seems to be generally pretty good with that. But here we go. He says, now the point in what we are saying is this, that we have such a high priest, one who is seated at the right hand of the throne of majesty in heaven, a minister in the holy place, in the true tent that the Lord set up, not man. So in other words, not in Jerusalem. For every high priest is appointed to offer gifts and sacrifices. Thus, it's necessary for this high priest also to have something to offer. If he were on earth, he would not be a priest. Not at all, since there are priests who offer gifts according to the Torah. You see that it's present tense. There are priests currently who offer gifts according to the Torah. That's ongoing. It's not replaced. It's not canceled. It's ongoing at the time of this writing. They serve a copy and shadow of the heavenly things, which is not, from a Christian replacement theology sort of point of view, a copy and shadow is derogatory, but not from a Midrashic Jewish perspective. Copy and shadow, that's what the temple is, copy and shadow of the heavenly things. For when Moses was about to erect the tent, he was instructed by God, saying, see that you make everything according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain. But as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry that is as much more excellent than the old as the covenant he mediates is better, since it is enacted on better promises. This leads me to ask the question of what are the better promises of the new covenant? The concept of first covenant and new covenant in the book of Hebrews is often misunderstood to mean that Messiah did away with the Torah and began a new covenant, right? But that's not the case. Rather, you should have learned, if you've been following First Fruits of Zion for any length of time, that the new covenant that the writer of the book of Hebrews is referring to is that which is found in Jeremiah 31. It's explicit because he quotes it. He quotes the whole passage in Jeremiah 31. And in Jeremiah 31, this new covenant says, I will put my Torah within them, and on their heart I will write it, I will be their God, they shall be my people. So Messiah has initiated a new covenant, but it is not a covenant that stands in antithesis to Torah. So what are the better promises of the new covenant? And you can find them, of course, where would you expect? But Jeremiah. Jeremiah 31. Exactly. Here they are. Let's run through them. You can look at these later in your own Bibles, on your own time. Better promises of the new covenant. God will forgive Israel's wickedness. We call that the forgiveness of sins. God will not remember Israel's sins. Does this sound kind of like the New Testament? some of the things we learn in the gospel, that sort of thing. Number three, all Israel will know the Lord. Love in the Messianic age. Number four, Israel will never cease to be a nation before God. It's one of the promises of the new covenant, is that the nation of Israel will never cease. Number five, God will never reject the seed of Israel. Number six, God will rebuild Jerusalem as an eternal structure. This is promises of the new covenant. Number seven, the entire city of Jerusalem will be holy to the Lord. So based on these seven promises, one thing that I can say is that we're not in the new covenant yet. At least not in its fullness. The new covenant has been instituted by Messiah, but it has not yet arrived in its fullness, because the new covenant is a covenant for the messianic era and the world to come. Okay, so now we're ready to press into this material. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 7. You've probably heard that the word covenant in this verse does not occur in the Greek. So it says, for if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second. So the word covenant doesn't appear in the Greek. It's supplied by the translators, even though the context implies it. And this is a problem, the supplying of the word. It's not irresponsible, but it's not irresponsible translating, but it does become a problem because it continues throughout chapter 9. And the problem with inserting the word covenant where it isn't originally in the Greek is that the writer of the book of Hebrews is trying to speak in broader terms than simply new covenant, old covenant. At times, he's speaking in those terms of old covenant, new covenant. In other times, he's speaking in terms of tabernacle and priesthood. At still other times, he's speaking even of the broader concepts of this world and the world to come. But by sticking in the word covenant into the text each time, it creates this old versus new, which is not the language he uses. So before we can proceed, we want to learn the language he uses. In Hebrews 8, 7, where it says, for if that first had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second. You have two Greek words. The word for first is protos. The word for second is deuteros. These are easier to remember because they are both borrowed in English. The English word prototype, for example, incorporates protos, first. The Septuagint name for Devarim, for the book of Devarim, is second law, which is a combination of the two Greek words, deuteros nomos, Deuteronomy, right? So easy to remember, first, second. Let's read the passage again and stick in our new Greek words. For if that protos had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a deuteros. For he finds fault with them when he says, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will establish a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. What was wrong with the protos? Was it the Torah that was at fault? It was the people. It was not the Torah, it was the people. It's the people that he finds fault with.